Follow the walk of the wild ones into the woods and the darkness. Rebirth the ways of the ancient ones.
Welcome, dear one, to the Emily Alexina podcast. I'm Emily, and I'm interested in finding and nourishing our highest human potential. I believe humans have much more beauty and goodness to share with each other and with nature, much more than we have expressed in recent centuries, although we have seen glimpses of it. I'm excited about our future. On this podcast, you will hear mine and other stories on themes like motherhood, birth, holistic healing, spiritual healing, education, and farming. Support my work by rating, reviewing, and sharing this podcast. Also consider making a financial donation via the link in the show notes. I'm currently saving for new microphones. Music is by Kate Sutherland.
Step by step through the unknown, I'll be your light and you'll be mine. In darkness, let love light the way to feed the soil of changing times.
Welcome, everyone, again to my channel. Today, I'm going to dive right into this book that was really transformative for me. I read through the whole thing so fast. Okay, maybe I'm not going to dive right in. Maybe I'll talk a little bit about it. You can see how small the lettering is here. So at first I was a little bit like, ooh, this is going to be a big one. But in the end, it was an incredible read. And especially as a past life regression like practitioner, a quantum healing hypnosis practitioner in the method of Dolores Cannon, I found this book fascinating. And as a yogi, it was pretty good. So I'm going to read my favorite part from this book. Maybe my favorite. There's a lot that I loved. I'm going to do a more general review, but I wanted to get this chapter out because it's really beautiful. And I wanted to reread it myself out loud to reintegrate the information more deeply for myself personally. And share it with any of you. Maybe this will encourage you to read the whole book, or just this information itself will be helpful in some way. So this is chapter 27 of Initiation by Elizabeth H., published in 1994. And I'm going to read a little bit of the end of the previous chapter that will lead us into this chapter 27. So page 176. Through this union, which takes place in your consciousness, the eternal longing of your manifested being ceases because it has found its complementary half and merged into unity with it. And for this reason, the sexual desire of your body also ceases once and for all. You become complete within yourself. Right here in this physical existence, you experience the divine state, immortality, bliss, fulfillment. And inasmuch as the same one individual being lives in all creatures, you simultaneously become identical with the true self of every creature. When you awaken within your own true self, you will achieve unity with God and simultaneously unity with the entire universe. You will lift your consciousness out of your body, out of your personal being, and experience all-inclusive cosmic consciousness. You will feel yourself as the I, the self, in every creature, in the entire universe, in God. This means you will again be eating the fruit of the tree of life. Then you will have moved out of the world of effects into the world of causes, out of the realm of the transitory into the realm of the eternal, out of the creative, created, into the creative, out of the realm of death into the realm of life. In short, you will have achieved your resurrection in eternal being, and that is initiation. Ptahotep ceases speaking. So Ptahotep is the Egyptian high priest teacher. I'll leave it at that. But I see this divine unity manifested in the impenetrable depths of his heavenly eyes. Endless happiness, calm, and peace radiate forth from his eyes into my soul. In his glance, I see the fulfillment of truth. He blesses me and I leave. Chapter 27, The 12 Sets of Twin Characteristics. The next evening, I find myself standing before Ptahotep again. The time has come, he says, for you to study and practice the 12 sets of opposites as your next exercise. In your initiation, you will be examined concerning them, so listen carefully and make a point of remembering what I'm telling you now. Just as keeping silent and talking are the two complementary manifestations of the same force, in the same way there are 12 sets of opposites which you must learn to control. From now on, you will spend only your mornings in the temple and then go back to the palace, and you must seize every opportunity to be among people as much as possible, because it is far easier to master each of these sets of opposites when you are in the temple than it is in the palace. Here you only meet people like yourself, striving to attain divine unity, as well as priests and priestesses already living in divine unity. But in the everyday world, you are subject to all kinds of temptations. You meet people who are slaves of their bodies, and such people try to influence you too. The danger of falling is much greater. If you can master all the characteristics and properties applicable throughout the world, you will also be able to pass the initiation examinations. These 12 sets of opposite characteristics are keeping silent, talking, receptivity, resistance to influence, obeying, ruling, humility, self-confidence, lightning-like speed, circumspection, to accept everything, to be able to differentiate, ability to fight, peace, caution, courage, to possess nothing, to command everything, to have no ties, loyalty, contempt for death, regard for life, indifference, love. The earth is now going through a long period in which body-dominated and self-seeking people will gradually take over the ruling power. But you already know that wherever negative forces manifest, positive forces must also be present, although in the unmanifested state. During this dark period of the earth, the sons of God who manifest the divine laws of selflessness will gradually abandon the earthly plane, withdrawing to the spiritual plane of the unmanifested. Nevertheless, they will continue to work in the human subconscious, as they actually will be the unconscious of humanity and will manifest themselves in the souls of maturing people as yearning for liberation and salvation. On earth, the megalomania of certain individuals, together with the growing dissatisfaction of the enslaved masses, will lead to bitter and ever bitterer struggles throughout thousands of years. Many millennia of constant struggling and bickering and the supremacy of avarice, vanity, envy, vengefulness, hate, and other animal characteristics would eradicate from the face of the earth everything that is good and true and beautiful, were it not for divine providence and a group of spiritually united people under the guidance of the sons of God working on the spiritual plane, who will save our secret knowledge from sliding into oblivion. The earth, like every other planet, is under the guidance of a high spiritual power, and this power manifests itself through the sons of God in a manner appropriate for the people concerned. So sons of God here is referring to the descendants of like the Egyptian rulers. This is written, I think, in about, or this story is said to be taking place in 3000-ish BC. And they're saying that they're basically descendants of, I think, like Atlantis and Lemuria, and of like a different race of humans, which is consistent with some of Dolores Cannon's work. It is manifested through a group of initiated people who, through their own development, have become peers of the sons of God. They are all co-workers in this great divine plan of saving the earth from darkness, isolation, and the rule of material and diabolic forces. Every initiate takes part in this work, and as you are to be initiated, this means you too. In order to be a useful co-worker in this great plan, one must first master the whole scale of the sets of opposites, and you too, for your initiation, will have to pass an examination in them. Mastering these attributes mean that you use them at the right time and in the right place. The same attribute that is divine at the right time and in the right place is satanically evil at the wrong time and in the wrong place. This is because God creates only what is good, beautiful, and true. There are no bad characteristics as such, and no bad forces, but only wrongly used characteristics and wrongly applied forces. You've already found out what it means to speak or to keep silent at the right time and the right place. To keep silent is perfectly divine and brings blessings on all concerned, if we do so where and when we should. But on the other hand, if we keep silent in a place or at a time when we should speak up, as for example, when we might save a person from a great danger with just a word, our keeping silence becomes satanic. And if we talk in the wrong place and at the wrong time, the divine gift of speech is turned into satanic chatter and gossip. In the next twin pair of opposites, receptivity is divine if we are receptive and open to everything that is high and beautiful, good and true. That is, if we are receptive to God's will and let him work on us. On the other hand, the receptivity or impressionability is disastrous if it becomes a spineless lack of character and capitulation to influence. Ability to resist influence means the ability to put up unflinching resistance to all low influences. But if we also put up resistance against higher forces, we immediately turn our divine attribute of resistance to influence into a satanic kind of self-isolation. It is the duty of every co-worker in the great divine plan to give absolute obedience to God's will. The latter can manifest itself directly through you or through other people. You can recognize God's will when you thoroughly examine everything that is asked of you to be sure that it is in agreement with your innermost conviction. God speaks to us through our innermost conviction, and we must give him absolute obedience. On the contrary, to obey someone against our own conviction, purely for reasons of cowardice, fear, material advantage, or merely wanting to be good, that is, for low personal reasons, this is servility, and it is satanical. Ruling means giving ignorant and weak people some of the ruler's own willpower. Universal love, uniting all the forces active within the people, should lead the people towards a general well-being without infringing on their right of self-determination. Any ruler who, without love and for selfish motives, imposes his will on others and violates their right of self-determination makes the divine activity of ruling into satanical tyranny. Humility is what we must feel towards the divine, towards the higher self which animates us. You must realize that all the good, beautiful, and true attributes belong to him, that your person is an instrument for manifesting divinity, but by itself, without divinity, it represents merely an empty husk. You should recognize within yourself the same divinity, the same eternal being, which manifests itself throughout the universe, and you must subject yourself humbly to this divinity. But you must never subordinate yourself to earthly or sub-earthly powers or bow before earthly forms, for this would mean turning divine humility into weak, cowardly, satanic self-humiliation, and by doing this you would violate the divinity which animates you with its own eternal being. If you want to be a good servant within the divine plan for salvation of the world, you must never forget that you do not live and work on your own strength. All power comes from God, and all powers you manifest come to you from your higher self and from God. Constantly remember that your person as such is an imaginary being. Your true being, the only eternal reality within you, is God. That's why self-confidence means having confidence in the God dwelling within your heart, but not in the phantom being of your person as such. Divine self-confidence is indispensable for every creative activity and represents an inner union with God. But when a person imagines his qualities and powers are his own and not God's, he turns divine self-confidence into satanic false pride and presumption. To be a co-worker within the great divine plan, you must also be able to make decisions with lightning-like speed. You must learn instantaneously, without hesitation, to choose the best of a number of different possibilities. Situations can arise in which only a moment's delay can mean missing the unique, never-recurring opportunity. When you can act in a moment with complete concentration and with a presence of mind that stands above and beyond all concept of time, your power to decide instantly is divine. But acting quick as a flash without concentration and presence of mind turns divine lightning-like speed into satanic haste. And that's why you must also learn divine circumspection. Before acting, you must control your temper and with lots of patience, allow the decision to ripen within you. In order to recognize the will of God, you must often allow yourself to reach the right decision. That's what it means to act with prudence. But if you carry prudence and circumspection to the point of never reaching any decision at all, you're turning divine circumspection into satanic doubting indecision. As a useful co-worker in the divine plan, you must learn to accept everything that fate brings you. Your worth is not determined by external circumstances, but by the degree in which you manifest God. Worldly degradations or humiliations cannot destroy or even reduce your inner values. By the same token, praise or glorification cannot make them greater either. For this reason, you must never be affected by the way ignorant people treat you. You remain what you are, whether people vilify you or glorify you. Learn to be contented in any and all conditions and to accept the circumstances fate gives you with complete imperturbability. Whether your work within the great divine plan requires you to live in abject poverty or to hold a high position and command a great fortune, you must regard either of these merely as a means to a great end. Neither of them must change your inner attitude. Learning to accept everything in this way is divine. On the other hand, you must always be able to decide when you, as a representative of divine guidance, must defend yourself against humiliation or calumny. In the same way, there are times when you must be able to decide that it's the right thing to do to withdraw modestly from glorification by the crowds and masses. To accept everything must never be allowed to degenerate into apathetic indifference or cowardly lack of character. Always choose the best and don't be satisfied with what's inferior. You must be able to differentiate and distinguish what's beautiful from what's ugly, the good from the bad, the true from the false, the divine from the satanic. Without a completely developed power to differentiate and distinguish, one can't be a useful co-worker in the great plan. If you want to be useful, you also must be able to fight with all your energy. With the sword of truth, you must be able to fight the shadow of error in order to help bring about the victory of divinity on earth. But your noble and courageous willingness to fight must never be allowed to degenerate into stupid quarrelsomeness. Oh, getting tired. And even though you must often fight bravely, you must never forget that you have to fight with spiritual weapons in order to bring peace to the earth. You must fight to restore unity to what has been torn apart, to restore peace to those who are fighting. But your love of peace must never be allowed to turn into a cowardly or comfortable kind of not wanting to fight. I think of the Bhagavad Gita here, of course. And in that story, basically there's the main king or prince, soldier, who has to lead his army into battle against family members and teachers and mentors who are on the other side, but who are committing evil, who are being tyrants. And he's asking God, like, I don't want to fight. I don't want to do this. I don't want to hurt anyone. And God, in the form of Krishna, is saying, like, you have to fight. You have to. That's your job, it's your duty. You can't escape it. In order to be a useful coworker, you also have to learn caution. At the same time, being able to decide the right time and right place to use this divine gift. You can save yourself and others from great dangers, harm, and useless sacrifices through the proper exercise of caution. But the divine gift of caution slips over into satanic cowardice when one doesn't dare to do something because of fear or lack of self-confidence. You must possess unflinching courage, and you must not fear any danger. You must stride forth courageously to face any difficulty, valiantly fending off any attack against the divine when the great goal you're working for requires it of you. But divine courage must never be allowed to deteriorate into daredevil recklessness. As a co-worker within the great plan, you must also understand what it means to possess nothing. Whether your task demands abject poverty of you or gives you the greatest wealth, you must always remember that nothing, absolutely nothing, ever or anywhere really belongs to you. On the contrary, everything is God's property, and from His property you receive something only for your actual needs corresponding to your task. Just as it's a matter of indifference to a canal, whether more or less water flows through it because the water doesn't belong to it, you too must regard everything fate gives you as something that comes to you from God and something you must pass on. What you will have to live on is something you don't need to worry about. You will always receive as much as you need. And no matter how rich you might be, you must always remember the fact that you really possess nothing. But this divinely positive attitude must never slide down into not caring about anything or contempt of things material. You must never expect the people about you to maintain you without work on your part. So this is, I think, alluding to like servants or helpers or, you know, housekeepers or things like that. Vitaly always says this when I complain sometimes about housework and I say, I want a housekeeper. I would love someone to do like our house cleaning. And he's like, well, we have to make sure that we're doing enough work to warrant that, like that we're like really serving our communities, that we're really that busy that we need that work, because you must never expect the people about you to maintain you without work on your part. You know, we also want our children to learn to do like the hard labor of cleaning and maintaining the home. Matter too is a manifestation of God, and so you must respect matter as something divine, but at the same time you must be master over it. You must master the art of being able to acquire as many material things as you need for your earthly task. And remember well that as long as you are on earth, you'll have to be dealing with matter, not without it, and certainly not against it. It's necessary for you to be able to acquire and hold matter, to master it and use it wisely. For otherwise, you're completely at the mercy of earthly powers and under their control, unable to carry out your earthly task independently and freely. But take care lest the divine ability to master matter deteriorates into a selfish satanic craving for possessions. As a co-worker in the great divine plan, you can't allow yourself to be attached to anyone. Learn to recognize the divine, the earthly, and the demonic characteristics in everyone. Don't love the person, but love the divine within the person. Tolerate the earthly and go around the demonic. Whenever your task demands it of you, you must be able to leave without delay the person you love the most, because you must always remember that the lovable characteristics in him are God, not the person himself. The person is only an instrument for the manifestation of God. You can find and love the same manifestations in other people too. Love God in everyone. Then you will not be attached to anyone. This not having ties must never be allowed to turn into general indifference and apathy concerning the people around you. You should be loyal in life and in death toward the people in whom you have recognized God's manifestations. You love your master and your co-workers in the great divine plan because you have recognized God in them. You are loyal to God in them because you love their person only as an instrument of God. In this way, the esteem and loyalty you show towards your master and co-workers can never turn into a cult of persons or personal glorification. That's an important one. To play a useful role in the great divine plan, you must be able to use your own person like an obedient instrument in front of the public. You must be able, in front of groups of other people, to animate your talents and abilities with your spiritual forces, raise them to a climax of brilliance in such a way that you manifest your spirit in the highest degree through your person, through the posture of your body, through the movements of your hands, through the glance of your eyes, and through the persuasive power of your oratory, all so that you can bring people under your influence and carry them upward with you to a higher spiritual level. In other words, you must be able to appear before the public without inhibitions and without being bashful. But the art of appearing in public must never be allowed to awaken the devil of vanity in you. It must never be allowed to degenerate into self-complacency and the base desire to show off with your God-given talents. When crowds of people enthusiastically cheer and applaud you, you must constantly carry in your consciousness the awareness that the people are not enthusiastically about your person, which is only an empty garment, but about God who has manifested himself through your earthly instrument. If, in your application of the art of appearing in public, you avoid the beguiling temptations of the devil of vanity, you won't be the least disturbed when, in fulfilling other tasks, it becomes your duty to remain completely unknown and unnoticed by other people. In such a case, you must not display your talents, but rather disappear in the crowd, as it were, without wanting to stand out or be noticed. However, this modest remaining unnoticed must not be allowed to degenerate into personal self-underestimation or self-destruction. In your heart, you must always carry your worth as a human being. If you want to be a useful co-worker in the great divine plan, you must be able to achieve complete disregard for death. You must have the unshakable conviction that there is no death at all. When your body has ceased to be usable, yourself casts it off, just as you cast off a worn-out piece of clothing. The self, however, is a branch on the tree of life, therefore life itself, and life is immortal. When you've become identical in your consciousness with life, you won't shrink back in fear of death whenever your task brings you into mortal danger. On the contrary, with complete equanimity and absolute contempt for death, you will be able to face the greatest danger. But never let contempt for death turn into disrespect for life. You must appreciate life above everything else. Life is God Himself. The eternal being manifests itself in everything that lives. You must never carelessly or wantonly expose yourself to danger. Appreciate life in your body too, and live joyously. But the joy in living must never become an end in itself and turn into sensuality. And last but not least, you must be able to pass the most difficult test of all, the test of love and cruel love, indifference. This last pair of twin characteristics makes up an inseparable unit right here on the earthly plane. Whenever you manifest one half of it, the other manifests itself automatically. You must completely give up on your personal viewpoint, your personal inclinations and feelings, learning to love everything and everyone without the distinction or discrimination, just as God Himself loves everything and everyone, just as the sun shines, sending its loving radiations with perfect impartiality on the beautiful and the ugly, the good and the evil, the true and the false. You must learn to love the beautiful and the ugly, the good and the evil, the true and the false, without discrimination and with perfect impartiality. The highest kind of love of all, divine love, is the perfectly impartial love. It must be a matter of complete indifference to you whether a thing or a person is beautiful or ugly, good or bad, true or false. You must love them all with the same love. You must learn that the beautiful wouldn't even exist without the ugly. Let me check my microphone. Good. You must learn that the good wouldn't even exist without the evil, nor the true without the false, and that's why you must love them all equally. You must learn that the beautiful and the ugly, the good and the evil, the true and the false are only reflected pictures of the ineffable, which we, for convenience's sake, call God. When absolutely constant and completely impartial love radiates from you to all creatures, your love will never again be mixed with personal inclinations or antipathies. You will consider everything from the standpoint of the whole, and when the interests of the whole community are at variance with those of individual persons, you will unhesitatingly defend the cause of the group with ruthless disregard for the interest of individuals. But this ruthlessness must always be rooted in universal divine love. It must never spring from personal antipathy. And you must also be able to manifest your impersonal, cruelly impartial love for your fellow beings in those cases when their soul can perhaps only be saved at the expense of their earthly well-being, even when such people are very, very near to you personally. You must even be able to look on dispassionately when those nearest and dearest to you get themselves into great danger, and if they don't react to ordinary measures, you must not try to hold them back by spiritual force, hypnosis, or magic powers when the salvation of their soul is at stake. It's better for a person to suffer material or physical ruin, even death, than to lose his soul. Under all circumstances, you must endeavor to save his soul. Just as God doesn't meddle in the affairs of men, but rather leaves them their free will, you too must let your fellow human beings apply their free will, and you must never compel them to do anything by force. In your helpfulness, you must always consider everything from the standpoint of spiritual well-being, not from the standpoint of the earthly and physical. But this divinely impartial love must never degenerate into indifference and apathy. I mean, you must never refuse to help a person because of personal antipathy when you can save him with earthly measures. And so this is pertinent because later in the book, she has an experience with her son where she kind of has to let him do his thing for the sake of his soul and has to not interfere. And it's like very difficult for her internally. Three more paragraphs before I finish and my husband has to go to work. I have to be with the kids. These are the hardest tests of all because you must give up your personal feelings, simply turning them off as it were. Only when you have completely mastered the preceding 11 sets of opposite characteristics will you be able to recognize the voice of God so clearly as to be able to feel, even in the most difficult cases, what you should do in perfect divine love and what you should not do. Then you will no longer be able to err because you will be love itself. And love can only act in love. You will only need to radiate yourself to be yourself, and the whole universe will be able to draw from your warmth, from your light, and from your strength. Then you will have become divine yourself, and your consciousness will have become identical with God Himself. You will have returned from out of the world of the tree of knowledge of good and evil, that is, from out of the realm of the tree of death, where everything is visible in the state of separation, into the realm of divine unity. You will then be eating again of the fruit of the tree of life, and of this fruit you will also give to eat to those who come after you, so that all may return to the unity of the immortal eternal life, to the eternal being, to God. That is like one of my favorite paragraphs. that is what I'm personally striving towards, and part of me is like a little bit afraid to say that out loud. But, you know, I think a lot of us talk about how we strive for, you know, different goals in our life, like career success or money or, you know, different things we want to have, or we strive for having kids or all the goals that we have in our lives. And I don't see it talked about so much in, you know, different communities that we're striving for unity with God, or we're striving to radiate warmth and light and strength to other people. Right? That inner feeling is something that I crave of that constant peace and inner freedom, and also being able to give that to the world. And I feel like if I say that out loud, it allows me to have that desire, and also maybe encourages other people to have that desire to say that out loud as their like uppermost priority in life above all things. Last little paragraph. Oh, you representative of God, I shall never, never forget your words. They have engraved themselves so deeply in my soul that I have become identical with the meaning of these words. They've even gone into my blood, into the marrow of my bones, and I find myself a different person after this instruction from the one I was before. But my task is to make all this come true. Period. Okay. I was aiming for half an hour with that. I did a pretty good job of it. That's chapter 27 of the book Initiation. A full review and other excerpts of the book are coming soon. Let me know what you think in the comments below. If you've read the book, if you like it, what's your favorite part of this book? And of course, liking, subscribing, sharing the podcast, YouTube channel, all those things greatly help, and I truly appreciate any help. So thank you so much for listening.
Follow the walk of the wild ones into the woods and the darkness. Rebirth the ways of the ancient ones whose tracks were washed away in blood. It falls to us now to open up and taste beyond what we've been fed. Take up the phoenix, fire of cleansing, change to light the path instead. Follow the walk of the wild ones into the woods and the darkness. Rebirth the ways of the ancient ones whose tracks were washed away in blood. It falls to us now to open up and taste beyond what we've been fed. Take up the phoenix fire of cleansing, change to light the path instead. Step by step through the unknown, I'll be your light and you'll be mine. In darkness, let love light the way to feed the soil of changing times. Step by step through the unknown, I'll be your light and you'll be mine. In darkness, let love light the way to feed the soil of changing times. Follow the walk of the wild ones into the woods and the darkness. Rebirth the ways of the ancient ones whose tracks were washed away in blood. It falls to us now to open up and taste beyond what we've been fed. Take up the phoenix fire of cleansing, change to light the path instead. Step by step through the unknown, I'll be your light and you'll be mine. In darkness, let love light the way to feed the soil of changing times. Step by step through the unknown, I'll be your light and you'll be mine. In darkness, let love light the way to feed the soil of changing times. Follow the walk of the wild ones into the woods and the darkness. Rebirth the ways of the ancient ones whose tracks were washed away in blood. It falls to us now to open up and taste beyond what we've been fed. Take up the phoenix fire of cleansing, change to light the path instead. Follow the walk of the wild ones into the woods and the darkness. Rebirth the ways of the ancient ones whose tracks were washed away in blood. It falls to us now to open up and taste beyond what we've been fed. Take up the phoenix fire of cleansing, change to light the path instead. Step by step through the unknown, I'll be your light and you'll be mine. In darkness, let love light the way to feed the soil of changing times. Step by step through the unknown, I'll be your light and you'll be mine. In darkness, let love light the way to feed the soil of changing times. Follow the walk of the wild ones into the woods and the darkness. Rebirth the ways of the ancient ones whose tracks were washed away in blood. It falls to us now to open up and taste beyond what we've been fed. Take up the phoenix fire of cleansing, change to light the path instead. Step by step through the unknown, I'll be your light and you'll be mine. In darkness, let love light the way to feed the soil of changing times. Step by step through the unknown, I'll be your light and you'll be mine. In darkness, let love light the way to feed the soil of changing times.